Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today's show is brought to you by Markham Search. Markham Search LLC offers premier professional and recruiting services. Markham Search professional recruiters recognize the importance of working closely with companies and prospective candidates to ensure the perfect match. Today, we have on the show with us Stacy Honke. Stacy's passion is teaching others how to communicate with influence Monday to Monday. As a keynote speaker and mentor to C-suite executives, she helps individuals see through the eyes and ears of their audiences. The result is career-changing insights. She previously wrote the number one bestseller, Yes, You Can, Everything You Need from A to Z to Influence Others to Take Action. Honke holds a certification as a speaking professional for the National Speakers Association and is a member of the C-Suite Network Advisors and a member of Forbes Coaches Council. Recognized as one of the National Speakers Association's top six under 40, Honke has appeared on the New York Times and Smart Money and has emceed TEDx and has appeared on the Lifetime Networks and WGN Chicago. Over the last 20 years, Stacy has trained hundreds of thousands of leaders, salespeople, and business professionals across the United States and abroad. The influence, skills, and techniques she shares build the confidence, credibility, and presence that create lasting results. Stacy Honke, the company she founded in 2004, provides keynotes, training, and coaching for organizations in a wide variety of industries, including manufacturing, healthcare, retail, advertising, finance, and insurance. Her clients encompass Fortune 500 companies and household brands such as Coca-Cola, GE, General Mills, FedEx, Kohl's, McDonald's, Nationwide, Leo Burnett, and several branches of the U.S. Armed Services. Stacy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for that nice introduction.
Oh my gosh, I know. That's probably the only part of the show, quite honestly, where I find myself getting tongue-tied, because when it's not off the cuff, you have to get the pronunciation just right.
Exactly. Well, you did a great job. Thanks for the opportunity to hang out with you tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so excited about this topic, influence. Life is all about influence, is it not?
It is. It's everything, whether it's in our personal life, our professional life. And I think it also ties to male, female, all generations, and then no matter what industry you're specializing in.
Yeah, so tell me, how did the area of influence become a passion of yours?
Especially over the years, and we are 16 years old this year, the company, and after working with such a wide range of executives, sales leaders, frequently individuals would say to me, I'm missing something. Why are people not following my lead? Why do I get interrupted at meetings? Why don't my emails get answered? My calls don't get returned? I mean, these are all examples of influence. And what I realized that especially as anyone climbs the ladder, it starts to get lonely at the top because feedback is flawed. And a lot of executives that I talk to share with me how they're consistently told how good they are, great, nice work. And they also stop recording themselves, or they never do that. And when I found that, wow, we really have such a misperception of how we come across, no matter what medium that is, I also realized we're making assumptions. We make assumptions of how much influence we have based on our title, based on the false feedback we receive, and then most importantly, the lack of self-awareness. We tend to go off of how people perceive us, the reputation that we've created, off of how we feel rather than what is reality. And putting that all together, that's where I realized, wow, I really need to redefine influence and really focus on what it is and what it's not.
So tell me, what is your definition of influence?
Yeah, and this is our second book came out this year, last year, titled Influence Redefined. Be the leader you were meant to be Monday to Monday. And the book first starts off by what it is not. I think a lot of your listeners can even relate because they may have experienced where they're in a meeting or maybe they're in a conference call back at the office, the person who's leading the meeting is so turned on. And that's what influence is not, meaning we turn it on and we turn it off. I'll give you an example. The individual that has a high-stakes meeting or a high-stakes presentation coming up, suddenly they start preparing, they start practicing. My definition of influence is it's so much more than that. It's not just about being influential when you need it the most. It's about how do people perceive you? What do they say behind your back, which is your reputation, that they might not be telling you? So influence means that your body language and your messaging, they are consistent Monday to Monday. No one ever has to guess who's showing up. They always get you, but they always get the best of you. The second part of the definition, there's two, that influence means you have the ability to move people to action long after the interaction occurs. Now, anyone in sales totally gets that. Because think about how a sale, you don't land a sale necessarily in the first conversation. A real, true, effective salesperson will land it after building the relationship, which might take 3 weeks, a month, 6 months, but they are building that relationship and they still have influence because that potential client keeps coming back for more, to learn more because they're intrigued based on that communication and that interaction.
Awesome. So it sounds like people mistakenly think that influence is something that you can do in the moment. But if I'm hearing what you're saying, it sounds like it's more ontological and more of a state of being. And that in order to have true influence, you have to consistently show up the same way and in a way that works for people, that isn't abrasive or inconsistent.
Mm-hmm. Because the minute that you're not consistent, and I'm talking about you, your personal brand, people start questioning. When you are consistent, you start eliminating all doubt in anyone's mind. I really believe that consistency is what, you know, there's a lot of talk around be authentic. Well, we can talk about it, but do you know how to do that? And I really think a layer to authenticity is this idea that no matter if you show up for work on a Monday, a Friday, a phone call, a high-stakes presentation, whatever the medium or day of the week or how you're feeling, people always get the best of you. They always know that you're going to show up with confidence. That, to me, leads to, as a leader, people truly following you because they trust you, and that trust is always consistent.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. What occurs for me in your speaking is that people, if they don't trust you, they don't feel safe around you, and eventually they'll leave you, because if you don't feel safe where you're spending 30, 40, 60, or 100 hours a week, what's the point?
Exactly. And if, you know, we're using sales as an example. I believe we're all in sales because you're constantly selling your ideas, whether it's in your personal life or in your professional life, whether you're on the phone all day or you're sitting behind a computer, you're still even influencing through an email. And it's just different layers to that. That maybe brings up another idea. That's another idea behind consistency, that how you come across in an email is also how people experience you when you're face-to-face. With this definition, you can tell that it takes discipline. It takes a lot of work because the majority of people we work with don't realize that their body language has a lot to do with how people perceive you. It's not just your message. It's not just your title. And it's not just your knowledge level.
Yeah, and it's funny because when we're talking about emails or body language, I know for myself, I used to be that train wreck of a person. I'm actually writing a talk right now called a recovering a-hole because I was that jerk who would send the all caps emails back when nobody told me that was a bad idea. Thank God my business coach.
I love it.
Don't you ever send an all caps email again or one exclamation point per email, if at all. I still have to catch myself, Stacey, because I'll be writing an email and I'm just very direct. It's who I am. And so I have to soften my language and throw in a how are you or a good morning before I get into the body of the email, because otherwise, just like in person, it can come across as abrupt if you ask for something or say something without kind of creating some sort of nicety or warmth in the email. I guess that's been my experience.
Yeah, I agree. And it's just, it's knowing what you're putting out there, whether it's through the many social media avenues that we've got to influence through, or it's the phone call, the face-to-face, it's really recognizing on not only what you're saying, but really focusing on that concept. Are you saying words that are in context? Do they have meaning? Do they have influence? And then you add the extra layer of how you're coming across. I think that's why any sport is difficult. Any sport that may perhaps your listeners have ever played or anything that takes muscle memory, it's hard because it's not just one thing you need to learn. You have to focus on so many mechanics. And I'm finding that when we have an opportunity, I keep saying we because I've got a team that also goes out and delivers our intellectual property. When we're out there and we start working with individuals, especially leaders or perhaps individuals who have been in the industry for a long time, we start pulling apart how they move, how they enter a room, and all this body language components, they start realizing, wow, this is so hard. I was teasing my audience last week. I said, it's like I'm taking you to the gym and you haven't done a bicep curl in a very long time. It's going to hurt. I mean, it's almost as if we waken up the part of the brain that you don't think about it. I mean, for our listeners tonight, how many of them really throughout this week, any conversation, when they're in the conversation, do they really think about, I wonder what my eyes are doing. I wonder what my hands are doing. Rarely do people think that way. And yet they don't realize that is just as important as making sure the message is clear, has brevity, and resonates with who they're trying to influence.
So how do you be aware, self-aware, and then execute a tone that is in line with your audience?
Yeah. The Influence Redefined book is built off of an influence model that answers exactly that question. And it starts with, the model begins with three key drivers. The first one I was slightly touching on earlier in our conversation, which is feedback. We have to prepare for the feedback. For example, if I wanted feedback from you prior to our interview tonight, our conversation, I would have said to you, here's what I'm working on. Would you listen for that during our conversation and then give me feedback afterwards? Because otherwise, if you ask for feedback after the fact, after a meeting, after a virtual conversation, most likely you will receive, good, nice job. And you're just going to float on something that is so fake. But it has to be, that has to be happening constantly, constructive feedback. The third, so if our listeners tonight can imagine a triangle, feedback is the left angle. The right angle of the triangle is practice. This is the hard part. We've got to get to the gym. We've got to get to the golf course, and we've got to start putting. We've got to start hitting the golf club. And this is the same way is when you're on conversations. I challenge our listeners tonight, as they're on conversations this week, think about, are you pausing? Are your sentences clear with brevity? Are you looking people dead in the eye when you talk? It's thinking about all of that material, verbal and nonverbal communication, that's such a big component of influence. Now, the base of the triangle, the third key driver is accountability. I don't think improving and enhancing our ability to communicate with influence, we can do it alone. We need accountability partners. So that's the first three, key drivers. Now, part of practice that my team and I focus on a lot, and we really push individuals to do if they're serious about enhancing their influence, is to either audio record or video record themselves on a regular basis. Because that's the truth. And that gives them really a honest look through the eyes and ears of their listeners, rather than what they believe to be true when they're communicating.
So tell me a little bit more about that. When you're talking about recording audio or video, mm-hmm. are you suggesting that that person then goes back and, like Michael Jordan, looks at what they could have done better, or that they...
Yes.
So, okay, got it. So they review,
yes,
basically the tape.
Huge. Mm-hmm. And you can even, you know, and I still do this. I've got coaches in my life that watch my recordings and rip them apart and pull me back down and build me back up. You know, you can have another set of eyes and ears to take a look at it, because I think we are our worst and our best critic of ourselves. Sometimes that can go in our favor. Sometimes that is a disadvantage. We've got the technology to do it, though. I'll give our listeners some examples. When I'm on conference calls, I have my sister come on as a silent observer, because I know she will tell me the truth. And before the call, I tell her what I want her to listen for, how I want to come across. After the call, 5 minutes. I really believe that we all have at least 5 minutes for our development in a day. She gives me feedback. I write it down on a post-it note, and my computer monitor is where I place it. So it's always in front of me. Our technical gadgets, our phones, often when I'm on a call with a client, I'll just record, not the client, I'll record myself on my smartphone and then go back and listen to, okay, how did I feel during the conversation rather than how does it come across?
Say that again. So you're saying, how did you feel during the conversation? Can you elaborate on that a little bit so I understand what
you're saying? Yeah, because what I'm finding out that what we believe, how we sound, how we behave, how people experience us, a lot of times is not the reality of what our listeners experience. Because we see and we hear ourselves differently. You know, there's been so much research, and as an example of this, in The Voice. Because when you speak, you hear it resonate, the sound resonates in your head, and whoever you're speaking to hears the sound resonate in the air. Coaching yourself on your voice, just on how you think you sound, is not very accurate. When you listen to yourself on a playback, an audio playback example, you get to hear, do you sound credible? Do you sound knowledgeable? Did you say too much? What could you have said more of, less of? Are you pausing? Are you rambling? Because when we're in the moment, there's just such a disconnect, unless I go back to those three key drivers, and you truly are getting prepared feedback, you're always practicing, you've got someone holding you accountable, then I think your self-awareness is very strong, that you're more aware of, I feel this way, most likely this is how I'm coming across, whether that's sane or indifferent.
I think that you're right. I think that you can tell sometimes, even after a show, I can tell, was I fully present? Was I distracted? Was I, you know, really interested and engaged with the person who I was interviewing? And for myself, I noticed in reviewing, when I review old speeches that I did, it was a terrible habit that I never realized I had. I would say the word interesting a lot. I would say, this is very interesting, or let me tell you about something interesting. And now I go back and listen to these speeches from a few years ago, and I cringe. It is painful to listen to myself, and I pity my poor audiences who heard me say how interesting something was 30 times in 30 minutes.
Oh, I agree. I look back, and I still, you know, I look at, I really believe I'm a lot more aware because of the work that I do. But I'm just as guilty. You know, influence is a lifelong process. It's not something that suddenly you say, oh, done, I've got it accomplished. Still, when I watch my video playbacks, there's always something. There's something that I need to be working on. I need to be polishing. And that, to me, is a true leader with influence as well, that truly understands this isn't something that is ever going to be done. It's something that I need to always continuously work on.
So I want to go back to what you were saying earlier about emails and about being consistent. I know something I personally work on, and I've met other people as well. Let's say that for whatever reason you had insomnia the night before, or you didn't sleep well, or you got in a fight with your significant other that morning, whatever these outside things might be. For me personally, and whether this is good or bad, I'm not sure, I will actually advise my staff and my team, and I'll say, guys, I have to be responsible for this. I am not operating at 100% today, so my emails might not be as clear. I might not be as coherent or cognizant as I normally would be. And I kind of do that as a little, like, kind of like a little cliff note, like, hey, just keep in mind, because if I don't sleep 100%, I notice I don't have the capacity to be consistent with who I normally am. Is that a good or a bad idea to let your followers, or in an office setting, to let your colleagues know that you might not be able to expect the 100% or 110 or 120% you normally get from me?
I've never had someone ask me that. I think you're definitely setting yourself up in a positive light, because you've got enough confidence to really convey the truth and what is happening that day. My first thought is, if it's something that just, there's no way that whatever's going on, that mistakes are happening, I think it's absolutely legit to have that conversation. I just always warn our listeners, don't use that as an easy way out. and it suddenly becomes more often that's happening than less frequent.
Yeah, for me, I think personally, I've noticed it happens about once a month where you just cannot sleep for the life of you and you toss and you turn. And I feel like almost dizzy the next day and my cognitive processes are definitely not where they're at. And I do agree. It's not that you want something or anything to be a crutch, but I think for me, my perspective when I do communicate that to the people I love or to the people I work with, it's being responsible in advance and just saying, hey, you might not want to have that important meeting with me today. I think that we should all do that as well, as be responsible as far as our influence and to know if you're in a leadership role and you have something like, for example, I've canceled reviews or important meetings I've had because if I don't have 100% clarity and I can't be fully present with the other person, it's irresponsible to keep that meeting on that day.
That I agree with.
I don't know. Just a thought I had.
I'm totally in agreement with you on that one. I've just never been asked that one, but I think there's something, you know, that it's, we hear this about leadership. There's something to be said about when you admit that, hey, I've got the confidence to come to the front of the truth and what's really happening. Because I'll give you an example of lack of consistency. This was years ago. I was observing a meeting of a leader. They're talking through some very difficult conversations with their team. And then later that day, I overhear them in the hallway talking to each other, their peers. Completely, the story was different. And I thought, gosh, if anyone catches you saying something completely different now, you're going to just damage, you're going to damage your trust. And we see this in media all the time. You know, when a company really messes up, I think anyone that really saves their trust and their reputation is those that act on the conversation right away and just stand up to admit their fault.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. It's about owning up. And I think that as human beings, if we meet somebody and they're authentic about their shortcomings, or they're authentic, not in a way where you're making yourself wrong or judging yourself, just more like an observation. Oh, you know, today I haven't eaten yet. If I don't eat, it's not a good, I have to be responsible every 3 hours. But it's just about being honest and accountable for yourself and then not being a victim of people or circumstances later. It's kind of like almost getting in front of any potential obstacles that might come in your day when you're being an influencer.
Exactly. I agree. Yeah.
So
I think that's part of building your trust.
Yeah. And so how does that occur differently, or does it occur differently for men versus women?
I can only tell you what I've experienced. What I experience with women more than I do with men is women tend to feel they have to say more than they really need to. And frequently I have women say, well, I don't want to be too direct because then I'll come across aggressive. My comment to that is, it's not about being aggressive. It's about being assertive and to the point. We tend to sugarcoat more often than men do. For example, what I meant to say was, I know you're busy, but sorry to bother you. And we tend to fill more. I'm not saying men don't do it. I just see if it was on a scale, where is it on the heavier side? It's definitely the females that do it.
I know that I've had a lot of experts on the show about the differences between men and women. And it's funny because I've personally had it happen firsthand, where as a woman, sometimes if you are direct and to the point to male and female counterparts, you occur as less warm and fuzzy, and women get coined tough or business-minded or whatever that might look like. But for somebody with the same skills and same background who's of a male nature or a background who's a man, it just is a completely different, it's what's expected, it's the norm. So it's funny how you have to learn the ways to navigate as an influencer and as a leader of what's expected and appropriate.
Well, the other thing I want to throw out there with that piece, I've seen women try to take on this role of being direct, but their body language will conflict that, which then makes them come across as aggressive. I've also seen women will add the very direct communication approach, think bullet points, but their tone is real harsh, or there'll be absolutely no facial expression, or their body language will be closed. So that's the other piece of it, is making sure that still be who you are, still bring your personality, what I'm trying to get women to do is really filter through the clutter. Only say what needs to be said. I think we conflict with, we're trying to soften our, or we're trying to build our body language to be this, all right, I need to be the leader and hear me roar. I'm like, no. Make sure your body language matches your messaging. And that to me is another piece of consistency.
Yeah, and that makes sense. And how does that come across, though, across different generations? So I know we talked in the beginning a little bit about this. Mm. How does influence occur differently, say, with baby boomers than it does with millennials?
Yeah. Just speaking from experience, because this is generalizing it. I've worked with millennials that are so polished. I work with other millennials that tell me they admit they struggle a lot if they have to have a face-to-face communication because they're so used to text and emails that suddenly they use that type of messaging when they speak. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? With text messages, that'll come through. Now, again, I'm generalizing here because I've also worked with boomers who take forever to get to the point and others that are way too direct and others that are really strong communicators. I think what I want to pull away from your question is that we need to adapt our message to who we're speaking to. And that's another piece that's in the book, Adaptability, that's part of the influence model that I don't think a lot of us give thought to. Suddenly, because we're sprinting through our day with the many, many to-dos we have, with the 24/7, we're constantly receiving messages from every angle, we don't take the moment to say, all right, who really needs to get this email? Now, how many of us are guilty? We put the whole company on it. And now there's this long train of emails that keep going. Or I just read an article, I can't even tell you who it was through, and it was all about people seated at the table. And how many of our listeners have been at a meeting and they're thinking, I don't even need to be here. I think that's where we're making the mistakes, is where we're not making the connection across generations. We're not adapting the message to what works for them and for their style. And sometimes it just comes down to asking.
Got it. And so how can people across generations, across gender, how can people begin to grow their influence?
I think it goes right back to those three key drivers. I use them for all those different varieties of individuals that you the categories that you talked about. I still believe it's the video, it's the audio taping. Without that, we are totally going off of how we feel when we communicate rather than what is fact. And no matter what generation we are, we all can benefit from practicing. I mean, again, I go back to my comment of it's a lifelong learning. We all can benefit from people giving us really true, honest feedback. But like anything that takes muscle memory, which really is what influence is, it's going to take work, it's going to take a lot of focus. You need someone in your life to be there to keep you on track. I tie it to if you ever worked with a personal trainer or you had a workout buddy, you do that because you know you've got to crawl out of bed at 5 a.m. because that personal trainer is working, waiting for you. If they're not waiting for you at the gym, it is so easy to hit the snooze button. And that's the same idea of someone holding you accountable to make sure that you truly are at the best of your best when it comes to your verbal and nonverbal communication.
Great advice. Well, Stacey, are there any other points or any other topics that we didn't get a chance to cover that you would love the listeners to walk away with today?
I think the biggest key is repeating myself with, if there's just one thing they would try for a month, it is the feedback, the practice, and doing the video or audio taping. And I promise if they did that, you will completely change, start making changes. Because once you see it and you hear it on a playback, you won't want to continue to do what you're doing. Or vice versa, you realize, whoa, that is better than I thought. I need to keep working on that.
I think that's great advice. And I love that you mentioned, too, that your sister would tune into the calls, because I think it's great to have somebody who can be a committed listener and somebody who can hold you accountable. I think we kind of go through life and we just kind of bounce from one person idea thing to another.
Can't figure out,
you know, they do these studies on animals and we're like an ape. We just sit there and we push buttons trying to get the same effect twice. And we actually don't look at the science behind it of what is having us be successful or not be successful at influence or anything.
Right. Another great person in your life is your significant other or whoever you spend a lot of time with, and any of your listeners who have children. I have little nieces in my life. They are the best for giving me feedback because they have absolutely no filter.
So true.
And in return, you know, what a powerful skill you're giving your children. I think the biggest challenge my executives have is the habits. Habits die hard. And they are the habits that they currently have. They're hard to break when you've been behaving, speaking, interacting the way you have for so many years.
That makes sense. Well, tell people, where can they find either of your books at?
They are on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Our website, which is my name, it's Stacy with an E-Y, HANKEINC.com. Where they will also find a lot of resources. My main goal is to just be there for whoever wants to connect socially and pump out resources to daily help people think about how can I grow my influence and give them real practical how-tos.
Awesome. Great. Well, thank you so much, Stacy. It's been such a pleasure to have you on the show today. And as always, if you miss any portion of today's show, it is available immediately for download following the show on the LA Talk Radio website under the Get Yourself the Job page at the bottom in the archive section. We also invite you later in the week, if you'd like, you can subscribe and listen at your leisure on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes and catch this or any other show that you may have missed and find those episodes there. And next week, tune in at 4 p.m. on Memorial Day as we interview Jessica Higgins about the difference that positive cultures make and looking at, are positive cultures actually more productive? So thank you again for joining us today, Stacy. Thank you so much to all of our listeners out there who tuned in, and wishing everybody a wonderful rest of your week and a safe Memorial Day weekend.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.